Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1 with It's for Women. The car insurance with extra benefits like personal accident cover.
Now, my next guest this morning is one of our most successful film directors. His movies Once and Sing Street were hugely popular, as also was the TV drama series Bachelor's Walk that he co-created. His most recent work was as writer-director of Modern Love for Amazon Prime, a series which, inspired by the New York Times popular column, explores love in all its complicated forms. The series also features a star-studded cast that includes Anne Hathaway, Andy Garcia and Tina Fey, and John Carney joins me now. Morning, John.
Nice to be here. Morning. How are you?
Lovely to see you. It's great to have people back in studio, actually. It's
very
like
nice
great.
To be here, yes.
Listen, for people who haven't perhaps seen us, tell us about Modern Love.
So Modern Love was a kind of thing that came across my desk, as they say in Hollywood, kind of 3 years ago, and a producer rang me up and said, did you ever read this column? And ironically, I had, because we obviously don't get the New York Times back then here. And I had read this tiny little sort of personal history, personal memoir column that appeared in the New York Times style section every weekend. And I had read it when we were shooting Begin Again in New York. It was the only thing that I could sort of digest with my morning coffee because I was busy making a film and the world was, there was too much going on. So I did end up actually reading this little column, and I kind of knew I had stored up these little quaint, cute, adorable, I guess, love stories in the back of my head. So when it came up, it was like, I actually do know those stories. And the producer asked me to pitch for how I would see a TV series adapted from them and based on them. So I made up something, which I usually do, which is to try and make them go away. So I came up with something that I immediately assumed would scare them all off, and they would say, okay, and they didn't. And then I got the job, and I had to then sort of developed them, and I rang up Tom Hall, who from Bachelor's Walk days, and we sat and read about 1,000 love stories, and we came out of those offices either completely cheesy and romantic or angry and like, oh, this is too quaint, and this is too much soft, sort of, you know, these kind of like very typical New York sort of Woody Allen, Nora Ephron sort of love stories. But we read 1,000 of them a day and sort of adapted a show. And the idea, I guess, for me at the end of sort of figuring out what it was to try and tell a bunch of sort of unlikely love stories set in a big city based around the type of stories, the people and the love affairs that you wouldn't have picked if you had a choice, but sort of pick you from just living in a city, because you don't get to choose who you meet every day when you live with cheek to jowl with a, you know, a million other people.
Do you have to be a hopeless romantic to make this series?
I don't think so, actually. I've been asked that question a lot. I definitely have a romantic streak. I still put Tom Waits music on and read romantic literature and, you know, love my Dalius music in the morning and all of that. But like, I also have a cynical side to me, and I'm actually kind of a bit fed up with the rom-com thing as well. And this show, hopefully, will become a series of stories that isn't just really about romantic love, actually. And I'm very interested in the idea of fraternal, paternal, maternal, you know, all the different sort of stories of really more human connectivity than love. And the title is really just because the column was called Modern Love. I'm not sure if I would have called it Modern Love, but that's the name of it. So I suppose it has to adhere. And we'll always have one or two big schmaltzy, lovely romances in it.
Big names got on board in America, like the names I mentioned. Was that hard? Did they come on willingly?
Surprisingly, they did come on willingly. I thought I'd have to, you know, I don't know, but bribe them or, you know. But they seemed, I think it's a couple of things. I think they liked the 3 or 4 films that they saw that I'd done a little bit. And then it's the half hour thing. It's like, I can go and do this in between gigs. I don't have to get, it's not a whole TV series. I don't have to sign up for a year. And the column had a good sort of, was a prestige sort of piece of, you know, it was kind of classy and sophisticated, and it was a week and a half of their lives. So I think that's partly, I don't think it's all me.
The interesting thing is you moved from New York to Dublin to make it. And you reunited with your cast from Bachelor's Walk, Simon, yeah. Don and Keith.
Yeah.
Was that great?
It was terrific. And actually the creators of, so Kieran Carney, who co-created Bachelor's Walk with myself and Tom, did an episode, and Tom also wrote and directed a couple episodes in season two, and we'll go on if we get a third season. So it was kind of a bit of a Bachelor's Walk, and there were crew members from Bachelor's as well on it.
Was that nice?
It was really nice, because yeah. we all of us, Keith and Simon, Don, myself and Tom and Kieran and Marcella and Kelly and all of the kind of the cast and the main cast and the crew of that show, that was a golden 3 years that we got to do that. We were in our 20s.
It was a beautiful series.
It was wonderful. And the
would
weather,
you do a Friends? Would you do a reunion?
No.
Oh, go on.
The Botox bill would be too significant. But no, but it was a golden period. And so getting Simon and Don and Keith back on set and was just really good fun. And reminded us all of, we kind of had the best 3 years of our lives, and we didn't, and we also kind of didn't know how lucky we kind of had it. Mm. We had money from RTE and BBC. We had this gorgeous summer. It was like 2000. It was before.
Yeah, it was
September.
A gorgeous series.
But it was a gorgeous time in our lives as well.
Yeah,
it
captured a moment. One of the episodes filmed here, actually, on Serpentine Road with the top down, it did strike a particular chord with you, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Well, it's about grief, and it's about this kind of, you know, this corny American idea of personal improvement is something that I don't necessarily really believe in, or getting over things, that kind of this obsession with that. That's a column, that particular column was about not trying to get over grief, but trying to accommodate it and move over a little bit first. And the car sort of metaphor for that seemed wonderful to me, that you physically have to move your arse over to the other seat to make room for the other people that are sometimes gone from your life. And that seemed to me a fantastic sort of metaphor. And also Mini Driver driving around Glendalough and Wicklow in a cool sports car was sort of visually interesting. And she had her own story of kind of her dealing with grief. And so we both sort of came together on that episode. But I think it spoke to us on that level. But it also was just, there's something nice about the idea of dealing with those bigger issues in a romantic sort of love story show, you know, that shouldn't really make room for hopefully we can make a show that can deal with really big issues in an interesting way.
Now you go right back with, of course, The Frames and Glenn Hansard. Is it true you were, I think you were 17, he was 19 when you met, and you were the bass player in The Frames?
So I was in school and Glenn was hanging around the streets thinking about putting bands together. And talk about golden times. What was that, 19? We're nosing back into the 80s. God.
Do you still play?
I do, yeah. I do. I have a bass and a guitar at home, and I take them down and dust off my dreams. I'm a hobby. I never really considered myself much more than a sort of a hobbyist, musically speaking. And I never... Once I left The Frames, I sort of, my decision about that was that I would never look at music as a job or try to make money from it. And ever since then, and I was about 22 then, I've enjoyed music more and more and more when it's purely therapeutic and for my own sort of personal entertainment.
You work in an area, I mean, obviously making film and TV drama, which has obviously grown in huge popularity. You've done really well, but is it always tricky? Are you always thinking, what am I going to do in a year's time? Or does it come to the stage because you had such success with Once and Sing Street that you've made it and you don't have to worry anymore?
It's a very good question, because it is a little bit sort of gig to gig. This, you know, it is. It's, and it's weirdly like the gig industry in a sense, ironically. But, and there is that sense of you never feel like you've arrived. And then, and you always feel, and actors will say this as well, like, if I could just get this gig, then I'm in. But you're never actually in. You keep on... That said, I do feel that once I made Sing, if you excuse the pun, once I made Sing Street, those three films, Once, Begin Again, and Sing Street, seemed to convince certainly the Hollywood financier, you know, there's a bit of form in those three films that we can trust. So I do feel I still have to prove myself every day, but I'm very, very lucky. And actually, that all comes back to the Irish taxpayer. If you think about it, and this sort of story of my own personal grit and triumph for the people go on with, actually the reason that I got to make Once was purely because of the film board. Mm. And I needed that 100 grand more than I've ever needed money to make anything. Well, and there was no way I would have gotten that privately. Myself and Glenn, too. Slightly washed up, you know.
No.
No, but at that stage, we were struggling. We were eating in the April chipper in
it's very nice.
Portobello, you know. But it was kind of, we were broke and we were trying to figure out what the next move was. And so really, the whole kind of Hollywood story is this rags to riches thing. It's kind of nonsense in a way. It's for me, the best thing that ever happened in terms of my film career is The Irish Taxpayer. And
that's
the
actually great to hear.
So anybody telling you otherwise, nobody went off and made it on their own and raised the money. It might happen in Hollywood where they don't have subsidy, but in countries like Ireland, we 100% need that subsidy. It's vital.
Does the huge growth, I suppose, in TV drama create a huge new vista for everybody? Like, in other words, it's not just you have to make movies and raise money to make movies. You can make TV drama now.
Yeah. Well, that's a brilliant question, and we could talk all day about that, because I actually think more and more the young guys and girls coming up now in their teens and 20s should be out making stuff on their smartphone, because nobody cares anymore about how things look. Mm-hmm. Nobody cares, you know, in Derry Girls is an example, people who just kind of do their own thing. But I think you could push that way, way further. And I think that because of the streaming devices and the amount of content, in inverted commas, that we're getting now, what people are actually looking for is idiosyncratic, personalized stories more than ever, because they go to the cinema to see the big Hollywood spectacle, the Marvel movies or whatever. They go to the streaming devices for these big, huge, smart HBO shows. But there's a huge audience that's now watching TikTok and YouTube that will be engaging with your work if it's about you and it's well enough thought of and made and considered. You know, so I think, personally, I think the kids who change the form and figure out new ways of dealing with technology and their stories through that technology will be the ones to sort of watch, certainly not guys like me in their 40s and 50s making fairly conventional TV. That's fine, but it's not exciting.
But that's actually a great hope for people listening this morning to you saying,
for sure,
go for it.
Yeah, you've got the device in your back pocket.
Go for it. Well, John Courtney, you ran yourself down there. Congrats on all your extraordinary success.
Thanks very much.
Best of luck with everything and keep playing the bass.
Yeah, I will, of course. I'll put a little bass lines on season 3 if we're lucky enough to get one.
Oh, yeah, well, fingers crossed you will.
Exactly.
John Carney, thanks so much for coming into me this morning.
Thanks, Miriam.
My pleasure.